Hello and welcome to the Socially Awkward Podcast, a hospitality marketing podcast. I'm your host, Calvin Tiloki, and today I am honored, thrilled, all the adjectives you can think of to welcome my guest, Bruce Jordan. You may know him as the MJ of hotels. I like to call him the Tyler Perry of hotels because this man has more shows on networks than anybody else in the hospitality business. Mr. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. So tell us, we'll start with the question everybody wants to know. Why are you the MJ of hotels?
The reason why I'm the MJ of hotels is because I'm able to turn around hotels like never before. I specialize in terrible hotels that are about to close or get foreclosed on, or just a way underperforming under the market. So they usually bring me in, say, hey, is there something you could work on? And I look for everybody looks for market saturation. I look for marketing saturation. I need to know if it's the marketing is saturated, which means everybody is doing the same thing at like a high level, like top tier. So once I look at the marketing, then I could look at the star reports and the market and everything else. But once I see that, okay, these mistakes are being made in the marketing and these mistakes are being made in operations, I usually can come to judgment really quick if the hotel can be turned around. So I turned around some terrible properties. I mean, like people like roach motels, prostitution, the whole nine yards, like this, where they had a bulletproof glass up at the front. Like I done turned around some terrible properties. So
can't be too safe.
There you go.
Wow. No, I think, you hit the audience with some good nuggets right there early on, you know, looking at the marketing to see the success of a hotel. That's fantastic. But I want to backtrack a bit because, you know, give the audience a bit more of who you are, what you do. You know, we've talked in a few different platforms over the years. You know, I've known Bruce now about 5 years. Had to be COVID-ish, yeah. Right around that time. Yeah, 5 years. We connected, and you know, via the many different platforms, Instagram, LinkedIn, and things like that. But Bruce is one of the few in the hospitality space that has made his niche in YouTube. You know, most of us are Instagram and LinkedIn, of course, but you know, Bruce is one of the few that has really carved out his role and his niche in YouTube. So that's what we're here to talk about today, is how to grow on YouTube and how he's done it, because I've tried it. It's not as easy as Bruce makes it look. So let's start. Just tell the audience a bit about your shows. You started to touch on it a bit with your background there, but yeah, a little bit about your background and the shows you have going on YouTube right now.
Well, most of my shows are educational. The reason why I focused on education is because, you know, I was once that person that didn't know the answer and I couldn't find it. And, you know that there's another answer out there, or you know that there's a better way out there, and but you can't find it. So I was once that person. So I said, you know what? You know, during a pandemic, everything was happening. I've seen a lot of properties in trouble, and, you know, they didn't know how to bounce back. So that's why I had started the platform. But my podcast, I have a handful of podcasts. One was True Hotel Leaders. I needed a podcast that gives us like a direct connection to the top, because a lot of people in property and operations, they can't just go up to their CEO or CFO or COO and say, hey, I have this question. How did you handle this when you were at the property? So that's the reason why I created that particular podcast. I have the Hotel Insider, what gives you a lot of the new stuff that's coming out that we don't know about, especially with like vendors and software and programs and, supplies, things like that, that there's like this new supply that came out or this new item that came out yesterday where you don't need, you know, this other expensive thing that you were using. So I created that so people know what's going on in the supply world and in the software world. And then I had to create another podcast called Hospitality Careers, where people can learn what we are looking for in a particular position, what they need to look out for, and some of the mistakes that we made in those positions so they don't have to make those same mistakes. So yeah. And then I also have the show Hotel Management Do's and Don'ts, which I'll be finishing season four fairly quickly this year. And so
sounds good, man. Let's see, like I told you, this guy has shows upon shows, but and that sounds like, you know, your umbrella there gives the audience a nice perspective of a nice holistic view of the industry. You know, there's many different angles. There's so many things to do in this industry. So yeah, commend you for that, because that is a lot. I've had the opportunity to do multiple podcasts, and it scared me doing more than one. So more than one at a time. So I commend you for doing that. But obviously the biggest thing about doing everything that we do on any platform is building the audience. And YouTube has some very specific ways to do that. What are some of the key strategies that you've used to grow your audiences?
My number one strategy I use is I knew YouTube and Google was one and the same. So I had to capitalize on search. So the same SEO and keyword strategy that you would use for your website, you would pretty much use for YouTube when it comes to search topics. So I had to get the right topics that everybody was searching for that had a lot of search volume, and made sure that was in my title, my description, my thumbnail, my tags. Make sure that was all throughout the video to make sure I'm able to rank and be seen by YouTube. And one thing I realized is that even if I wasn't ranking for search and in YouTube, I was ranking for search in Google, because Google would take that same video out of YouTube and put it on Google. So I'll be like one of the first two or three videos that that will come up because of the amount of content that I had.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And just a quick side note on that, obviously, you guys know I run a marketing agency focused on organic social. Instagram is now doing the same thing. Instagram has joined that game of making all your content SEO searchable. It used to just be the bio, so your account would show up, but now individual posts can do that. And it has that same ability that Bruce was talking about with the YouTube videos. So make sure you stay ahead of the game on that and add those keywords and search terms to your content. But that's fantastic. So tell us a bit more about what works on YouTube and what doesn't. In your experience, what type of content resonates most with your viewers?
The number one thing, no matter what the content is, especially when it comes to YouTube, it has to be entertaining. So like the conversation that I would have in a boardroom would not be the same conversation I would have on YouTube. So a lot of people, like when they look at my videos, like, dude, it looks like you're just two guys kicking it. I'm like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like. You don't want to be, you know, suit and tied up and all boardroom ready when you're shooting videos on YouTube for, you know, because the span is very, very small when it comes to video nowadays. So the viewer is like, you know, 5-6 seconds, they're out if it's not entertaining. So the first thing is you gotta put some personality into your videos, no matter what the topic is. I have some crazy topics. Some topics are about financing, hotel financing, and you know different loans that are available. They're not the best subjects that everybody wants to talk about, but how I phrase it in the catchphrase. I remember one video was like how to get a hotel loan with bad credit. Like, how do you get a hotel? How do you buy a hotel with bad credit? Like, you know,
I can't even get a cell phone. This man's telling me I can get a hotel.
And the guy was actually pretty good. Like he was breaking down how like the credit doesn't matter when it comes to buying a hotel and getting a hotel loan. You need these three things. So yeah, it was entertaining because, you know, there are some people that, you know, they have a 650 credit score. It's fair, but they don't believe they can buy a hotel with it. So that actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. So obviously, you know, all your podcasts are about hospitality. Give us a little bit of your background in the industry, as well as how that helps shape your content.
Well, I started off in the hospitality industry in the accounting. I started as a as an accounting temp. I was an accounting clerk hired to do accounts payables. And within a year, I was the assistant controller of that particular property. I've been doing accounting for over 10 years before I shift into operations, because I seen the numbers, but I didn't know why they didn't make sense. So, you know, I said, you know, one day I'm going to be a GM. So I gotta get into operations so I can figure out what's really going on. And at the time I was with the Hilton, and they had a GM training program, and they threw you everywhere. They put you in housekeeping, they put you in maintenance, they put you at breakfast before they said, okay, now you, here's the keys. Now you could go run a Hilton. And I actually end up not becoming a GM at that property, end up becoming the GM at another property. So I faced a lot of challenges when I was in the hospitality industry, particularly with underdeveloped team members. You know, I had a lot of hustle, and, you know, some people just want to do their job and go home, and I can't blame them for that. So when I noticed that, okay, that it's all about the training, and a lot of the mistakes that I made, I had to figure out on my own. And on top of that, I was able to recover faster because I was putting in so many hours. You know, when you're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, you know, you learn a lot faster. So the main thing that when I first started doing this is I said, you know, it's the pandemic. Nobody really knows what to do. Let me give them some ideas. Let me give them some pointers of some of the things that they could do to get back to where the things were, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, man. So let's get into a little bit more of the nitty gritty. You know, a lot of people, when they're getting ready to do any sort of content, you know, they feel that, hey, I need to have the most expensive camera, or I can't afford to do that yet, or the microphone. Let's talk about gear. You know, you're obviously a videographer because you do a lot of YouTube and not just podcasting. I know that you do these things for hotels, drone footage. I've seen you in action with the drone. but, you know, what's your go-to setup for getting started, and where should people be looking if right now they're listening to this, I want to start a podcast, I want to do a YouTube channel, where should they start?
A lot of the gear that I use, you definitely want to get a decent camera. The number one thing you want to focus on is autofocus, because you're not going to know all the tips and tricks and f-stops and frame rates and all that stuff when you first started. So you want to get something that has really, a camera that has really good autofocus no matter what you pay for it. I shoot with a lot of Sony cameras because most of the stuff that I shoot is in low light. So Sony has very good low light footage when you're shooting. So that's why I use Sony. But have really good autofocus and have really good lighting. I've invested thousands of dollars in lightings and soft boxes and everything else you can imagine, because that's what really gives it that sharp, crisp look. Like, your lens is this big, so it's trying to see everything out of this big to here. So the more light you're putting on a person, or gives the camera to see, the sharper the image is. And sometimes it works backwards. Sometimes you put way too much light on, you can't see anybody. They look like powder.
I don't know how many people are going to get that reference, but
they're going to be like, who's the master? Like, this guy got the glow. Why? Where did this guy get the glow from? Sure enough. But, oh, shout out to Show Enough from The Last Dragon. but yeah, can't have too little, can't have too much. You know, it has to be a happy medium. But that's what really makes the videos pop, is, you know, having great lighting and having a camera that has great autofocus, especially for me in the beginning, because I started out with a $600 camera. And I just took it from there. And what really made the difference was when I hired a videographer, and my camera wasn't that great, but I don't know what he did. He set up the lights, he did the adjustments, and man, he made that look like it was a $30,000 camera. I felt like I was in Tyler Perry Studios by the time he finished working that little $600 camera. But yeah, it's a very expensive hobby. I got some lenses that cost thousands of dollars. So, but I love it. I enjoy it, and I'm very passionate about it. But at the end of the day, you still got a business to run. So I'm just happy I'm able to, run my business and do something to contribute to the industry, and have fun at the same time. I love my drones. So
tell you, man, that drone is serious. We were filming something down in Florida, and this man sent the drone up and away. That flew off like a UFO. I was like, is it coming back? Like, does it have a radar which is coming back to your watch or something? Like, you sent this thing. So I was like, you know you paid for that. You might want to bring that back.
It's weird because it takes a little while to get comfortable with just having a couple of $1,000 just flying around in the air like that. The first time I've lost a couple of drones too. I've lost about two or three of them. So when you lose, when you literally see your money blow away, it's definitely a different feeling.
So how does that happen? Does it like get caught in a updraft or something like that?
The wind picks up and the drone can't handle it and it just takes it away. I had some landings go wrong. I had did a shoot. I was directing a shoot and I'm like, you know what? I'll just bring my own equipment instead of having this guy, rent out his other $20,000 cameras and stuff. And I said, you will use my drone. I mean, at the time, I didn't see anything wrong with it. But I didn't realize landing on water on a boat is a little different from landing on land. And I was landing it and it just hit the rim and it just tanked right in the ocean. And I was like, okay. And I figured out later on that there's these little buoys that you can get attached to the drone so that it just floats, So you live and learn,
Live and learn. Yeah. That's experience.
Yeah. So I lost about $1,600 because I didn't have these $30 buoys on the back of the drone.
That's like when you get insurance for your flight. I don't need that. I'm not going to do that. And then you like get canceled or plans change and you
lose your luggage.
Non-refundable. Yeah, you lose your luggage and you're like, maybe that $60 was worth it.
There you go.
Anyway, knock on wood. We don't want to put any of that energy out in the universe. Nobody's losing luggage or missing flights
anymore.
Well, let's see. If you're on Southwest, you can't even choose your own seats anymore.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think they start charging for the bags too. So
yep. Their audience is quite irritated, which I can't blame them. That's what they were known for,
That's right.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, let's get back on track here. So, obviously you're the, we just talked a lot about gear and, the algorithm earlier. What are some of your tricks of the trade to make sure that you're filming, and making the video content look polished? Is it a lot of editing? You touched a bit on lighting, but is there anything else that goes into it to making sure that on the front end you do as much as you can?
Yeah, one of the things that really makes a huge difference is audio, and I always struggled with audio, especially in the beginning. Now I found some programs, some software that's called Adobe Enhance that enhances the audio, so it takes out all the background noise and stuff. So when you're, cause a lot of times we're shooting live and at an event or, in an open space. So there's always some background noise. So that's one of them. Of course, I already touched on lighting. But having a really, really good editing program that highlights that brings out the highlights and brings out the lighting and brings out the colors. It does the color grading. My video editor is like really, really good. That he's able to make magic happen, but that's definitely key, is having a really good editor to edit your video.
Yep. I've learned that along the years that video editing takes a lot of time, a lot of skill, and most importantly, a lot of patience.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would, I would definitely second that motion. I would definitely second that. Editing is tough, and it's better to find an expert that can do this and turn it around in a decent time before you go break all that gear that you just bought out of frustration, because it's taking you a week to make a 30-second reel.
For real, it really is like that. It'll take, you'll be working on a 1 minute commercial for days.
Yeah,
you know, not realize what's going on. Yeah,
I mean, sometimes I'm making reels for Instagram, and I'm like, I've been here for 2 hours. Like, why am I doing this? this reel is 10 seconds, and you know, it's just for some laughs. Why am I taking 2 hours to make this? But yes, video editing is a very intricate skill. So if you can't do it, I would certainly look for some people. And shameless plug to my sponsors here, Market Scale. They do all that good work for us. So any of my videos that you see that's on LinkedIn, know that Market Scale edited those, and I did not spend the hours to do it. But getting back into into your show, formats, do you typically script things in advance, or you do more off the cuff?
For my shows, I do off the cuff, because I've been doing hospitality for so long, like I already know the problems that I faced or have, and either I know what the answer is to the question I'm about to ask. So I'm either looking for the same answer or a better one. And I've been caught by surprise a couple of times where someone's like, well, yeah, I usually do it this way, and this is what happens. And I'm like, yeah, that's much easier. I think I'm going to, change my strategy on that too. So it's just easier for me to go in and say, boom, 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 these are my questions off the cuff, versus me having to sit down and write and figure out, what to say and everything else. It just seems more natural to me.
Yeah. Have you had any favorite interviews where you just kind of went off the cuff with people and you find yourself not on script at all, just having a good conversation?
Yeah, there were a lot of people don't know. I used to be an F&B controller. So I meet these F&B guys all the time, and they're, they know me for the revenue aspect of things. They don't know like my whole background. And so his name was Nick, and I'm asking him all of these F&B questions. He's looking at me like, where is he getting these questions from? And he's not knowing, like, I've had these problems when I was in that F&B.
Right.
Like people voiding checks just to keep cash to give themselves the bigger tips, or they'll avoid a check, they'll avoid an item off the menu to give themselves a bigger tip. And you're looking at, these void reports, and it's the same server doing all the voids. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like those are real, real issues and real problems. But yeah, I caught a lot of people off guard.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, we like that. We like that. Keep them on their toes.
Yeah.
So you and I can both vouch for this, and we sort of touched on this when we were at High Tech this year. A lot of people started businesses, podcasts, different platforms about 5 years ago in COVID, right? Nobody had anything to do but start a podcast, and which was great. But fast forward 5 years, and there's only a handful of people left. Being consistent and staying creative is no small feat. It's not an easy thing to do. I've seen many people in my lane with the memes. There were quite a few of those type of accounts. They fizzle out because they realize you got to do this all the time. Yes, anybody could be funny for a week, and of course, what you do, how many people started YouTube shows and podcasts that fizzled out, and you've got four of them going at the same time. How do you stay motivated to continue staying consistent while also remaining creative and not having stale content?
One, I take a look at things that I've done in the past and they take a deeper dive into it. A lot of people get burned up when they feel like they're talking about the same thing all the time, but they're not realizing that there's some key points in the content that they weren't able to get in the first video. They get in the second video and the third video. My number one video, surprisingly, isn't about revenue. It's about night audit. I have like the number one night, like if you Google hotel night audit, I think I'm like number one or number two. And that video gets about 400 hours a year. It gets like 30,000 views or something like that
Wow.
a year. So,
If those were nightly stays, they could be a platinum at Hilton.
okay. So what I did is I made another night audit video covering the duties, like night audit duties. So you have to focus on what's working. Number two, do not be afraid to take breaks, and know how to take your breaks. One thing that give me breaks is my reels. So I will make one full video, maybe 10, 15 minutes, and I take that video and I break it up into 30-second reels. So if I don't do another video that week, I still have content posting,
Right.
even though it's not new content, but it may be new to the individual that's watching because, they may not have watched the whole 15-minute video. They probably only watch 1 or 2 minutes. So now they get to see that other section and they didn't see, give it to them in pieces. So, and there's been times where I just took a week off. I'm like, I'm this is my week off. And I seen that across the board on other channels where they're like, we're not going to be recording for the next 2 weeks. We'll see you back in a couple of weeks. We're taking a vacation. That's definitely the main thing. And don't be afraid to use the remix button. There's a software that I use that it searches all of the hottest videos and what's going on, by your sector or by your industry or by the content that you publish. And it has a remix button where you see something that's working, and let's say you see something that's working in the gym, and you can hit the remix button and it will remix the whole video for you. Like the layout and the script and stuff like that, so you can apply that to your industry. Yeah, it's crazy.
Interesting.
It's called vidIQ. It's like an SEO software for videos, but it has a lot of AI features, where it like writes your description and gives you a better title and it gives you your tags and everything. So all you have to do is, cultivate it and procure it to what you're doing.
That's awesome. That's a tip and trick right there. Love that one. So of course, as people get into wanting to be a creator, there's many different reasons to get into doing this, whether you're just inspired to talk about a topic, but a lot of people obviously are looking to do this for monetization, brand collaborations to grow an audience where that can be monetized and make some level of living off of what they like doing. So what advice would you give to a creator looking to monetize their content? Or particularly land partnerships with brands.
Monetize yourself first. Everybody had something that no one knows and that they can sell. So create that product going into it or while you're developing your audience. So this way you actually have something that you can sell. I had a couple of brand deals, and a lot of the most of the brand deals that I had, the only thing they wanted was $1 billion in revenue. They for some strange reason they thought the little $25,000 or $30,000 that they gave me was going to translate into $1 billion, and that's not the way it works. Yes, you will get deals, but the most thing important thing that a brand should be looking at is exposure, because no one has ever heard of you. Like nobody knows you. So if I'm recommending you, it's because I've did my due diligence and I see that, okay, this product would be great for the hotel industry and this is something you need to actually look into. But don't overpromise and oversell anything. Just let them know that this is the reach that you're going to get. This is what we're going to deliver. But at the end of the day, they still don't know you. This isn't a one video. One video is going to make an impact, but it's not going to change the world. You need a series of videos for everyone to recognize you. There's a reason why you're starting to see Coca-Cola on TikTok. You know, they don't know what they don't know the ROI on a TikTok ad. Like, they know how many people see it, but they don't know, like, they don't click a button and say, okay, this many people bought this amount of Coca-Cola because
they saw that TikTok. Right.
It doesn't work like that. So, but a lot of, especially startups, they don't understand that. They have a hard time gauging and they have a hard time, you know, formulating what is going to be the impact on the deal. So that's definitely number one. Number two, I will prefer an upfront affiliate program. You know, we're going to give you this upfront to make the content. And, you know, every per sale, this is what you get if I know the person. Because I mean, again, it was another deal where, you know, like I said, the software was really, really good. But, you know, I will bring people on board and they could just say, okay, we sold the company. We're not down to this deal anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So those are things that you really have to look out for when you're looking at brand deals. They're great to have, they're great to get. But you just really have to know who and what you're dealing with.
Yeah. No, that's a lot of good advice in there for sure. I think my favorite piece of it is just making sure that it's a brand fit, right? Mm-hmm. You see so many of these things all over the internet where a certain influencer or whatever, whoever is that content creator is there. Oh, check this out. I'm like, you don't post about this at all. You know, it's one of the things we talk about when we're doing influencer partnerships with our, you know, for our hotel clients. The first thing is this person's content a fit for your brand? Because regardless of how many followers they have, if that person posts about hotels, staying at your hotel, when they only ever post about makeup, how is this a fit?
Exactly.
What are you going to get out of that? Right. So absolutely. That was my favorite piece of your advice there. All right, so we're getting
into I just got one more little tip, and this is for the brands and the people that are offering these deals. Make sure, and I don't think they're really aware of this. If nobody knows you, why are you running ads to an audience that you don't have? If you're going to run ads to the person that you're doing the deal with. Use their platform and run ads through their platform. Don't run ads on your platform if nobody knows you.
Right.
You're not going to see any. No one's going to see you. Like, you're going to waste all this time with Google and Facebook trying to figure out who your audience is when that person already has the audience that you want.
Yeah.
So that's a big, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, going back to the 80s references, it reminds me of Coming to America. He's on a subway. I renounce my throne. Like, no one's here who could do anything about that.
Like, what throne? Who are you?
Who are you, man? If you get your crazy self off this age. Oh man! All right, so we got one more question left, but I'm throwing in one right before that. So this is the first time being that this is the socially awkward podcast. What is the most awkward situation you've ever had, either filming a video live or on air? Do you ever have like an awkward situation with a guest? Awkward moments?
I had two awkward situations. One, I was at this school and I was shooting a commercial for a friend of mine, and you know, there's this lady on the side. Like, I didn't think anything of it. You know, I thought she was just sitting there watching the shoot. And we went into our drone footage and stuff. Next thing I know, she just takes off her clothes. She's in a bikini and she jumps in jumps in the water. I'm like, what the hell? Like, what is going on here? Like, this is a school. Like, this is not the beach. But, you know, there was a little plot of sand. And for her, it was the beach. I thought that was just weird. And then she was worried about being on camera. Like, she sees the drones flying by and she's like covering up. I'm like, why are you here? That was one. the other one was when your equipment doesn't want to work, it's not going to work. That is the worst, though. And this happened recently. that I was in a rush and I was being rushed and I forgot to hit that record button on both cameras.
Oh man.
I got all the audio and no video. So I said, you know, I'll make this back up. We'll do another shoot. But yeah, I've never done that one before. Both cameras.
Yeah.
So just
make that episode of audiogram with the EKG waves.
There you go.
Or make it into like a, you know, pop it into ChatGPT, make it into a cartoon with voices. Well, sure. That's cool. Sure. All right. So last question, obviously you've dropped a lot of knowledge here today and I'm sure anybody's out there looking to start a YouTube channel has got a lot out of this. But what one piece of final advice for an aspiring creator?
Listen, make sure you're doing this because it's something that you want to do. You know, it's great to have all the cameras and have all the subscribers, but this takes time. It's very rare to go viral. They make it sound like everybody goes viral in the fifth video or something like that. No, it takes time to establish an audience. It takes time to get the videos out there. Everything takes time. So make sure this is something that you want to do for you.
Right.
And you're not doing it just because, you know, you're following the trend like everybody did in COVID. Like, I can do a podcast. I'm going to be the next Joe Rogan. Like, no, at this point in time, Joe Rogan doesn't even want to be Joe Rogan. He is tired of talking. He misses the days where he could just watch the fight.
Is that the dude from Fear Factor?
He misses watching people eat tarantulas. So, you know, make sure you're all in. So after the third, fourth, fifth, or 100, I think I have 1,100 videos on YouTube. You know, it takes a lot to get there, you know, and don't expect to be Mr. Beast. Like it can happen, but you know, it just takes some time and a lot of work.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, appreciate it, man. Let the audience know where they can find one of your many shows, either live or in syndication. And
oh yeah, you can go to YouTube, go to hotelguestmanagement.com or go to hotelyoutube.com and that'll take you directly to my YouTube channel.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Bruce, always a pleasure, man. You can find Bruce on LinkedIn, Bruce Jordan, MJ of Hotels. As always, I'm Calvin Toloki, your host of the Socially Awkward Podcast, founder of RevPar Media, where you focus on branding, organic social, and digital marketing, commercial strategy for hotels. Check us out. Give us a like, subscribe. You know what to do. Follow me on LinkedIn as well for more updates and for more clips of this incredible episode. So we'll see you on the next one. Thanks for joining.
Take care.